You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dave Weigel on the Wisconsin surprise last night. Not huge, but could be a harbinger. Also on the program today, 2 days from a government shutdown, Republicans can't even deliver themselves. Meanwhile, the Senate okays expanded surveillance powers for Donald Trump. ICE plans a massive assault in California. Koreans to share a flag at the Olympics. Trump administration looks to institutionalize protections for bigoted healthcare workers. And nearly all members of the National Park Service Advisory Panel resign. Ex-CIA officers suspected of spying for China. And U.S. executed more bombings in the second half of 2017 than in the 2 years prior in Afghanistan. Lastly, 21 states suing over net neutrality. All this and more on today's program. Of course, yesterday, Steve Bannon, too, testified, I guess, for what was it, like 10 hours?
I need a day off. Hey, Sam, I'm going to come in back next week. I'm going to D.C.
Testified for, I guess, 9.5 hours in the House panel. Basically didn't say anything. But he has been subpoenaed by Mueller, and apparently he said, sounds like that's what his plan is. I'm doing all my talking to Mueller. So that should be rather interesting and hopefully cause a little bit of anxiety in the White House. Why shouldn't they have some? What is that? Whose microphone is that?
Michael's.
Michael's, of course.
What's going on now?
You got some, you got to move your power source around that stuff. There you go.
Sorry about that.
I don't know. So Steve Bannon testified yesterday. We'll see. We'll hear more about that as we go along. And we didn't even mention yesterday the story of, I guess today is Wednesday. We didn't even mention the story of Donald Trump paying, $150,000 to a... a woman to
pure, unadulterated, clean, electrolyte fueled urine, the best.
I didn't start anything with the wife.
So apparently, I mean, the story is supposedly right that there's an adult film actress who
could say that again.
Who was paid? She was talking and talking and talking. Apparently, off the record. Leading up to the election, wanted to get paid by Donald Trump to not tell her story. And we're to believe that it's only that she's just covering up the fact that she had an affair, like an adulterous relationship with him.
Sure.
Right? I mean,
oh, totally.
Isn't she got paid for covering up something to the effect of like either that she got paid to have sex with him or paid to do something that is
closer,
a little bit less than vanilla.
Warmer.
Right? That's the deal there. I find it hard to believe there's only one woman out there that he hadn't paid off.
I still find it hard to believe that he's had sex.
And I find it hard to believe that a woman would willingly do it without there being some type of significant financial remuneration.
Oh, like significant.
Right. So it could be just like, here's an extra 160 to not tell about the 500,000 I already gave you.
It's a package deal.
But I don't know. I guess this would have been a bigger scandal with just about any other president, or really, frankly, any other cabinet member, or maybe like low-level state representative. I mean, just
I
about anybody.
I chipped the bitch off $500,000. Why is she still talking? Just trying to
honestly,
get a little,
it's sort of amazing.
Just a little pee play. What the hell?
Speaking of hygiene, when it comes to your health, I've said this many, many times. Brushing your teeth is one of the most important parts of your day. I have bought a Quip for my sister. I have bought a Quip for my daughter. I have a Quip, obviously, for myself. I may get one for Saul because he likes it. Although it competes with his Paw Patrol spinner. So until Quip has like a Paw Patrol branded toothbrush. But why have I gotten all of these electric toothbrushes for some of the most important people in my life? Because it is, first of all, I've gotten obsessed about dental hygiene. I think I've talked about that over the past couple of years. I'm not exactly sure why. But I think probably it's because like you get to be my age, you start to realize, oh, man, this is when I'm going to have to start to like lay out huge bucks to fix my teeth.
Never too early to worry about dental hygiene.
That's why I'm telling people right now. And the key to an electric toothbrush is that you use it. That's why Quip has combined dentistry and design into making a new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into a slimmer design at a fraction of the cost of a traditional electric brush. You can also, it's so easy to travel with this brush. You don't have the huge, like you don't feel like you're taking this like huge machine with you as you travel. It's with Quip, guiding pulses alert you when to switch sides, making brushing the right amount effortless. It even comes with a mount that sucks right onto your mirror, can be used as a cover for hygienic travel anywhere. And Quip's subscription plan refreshes your brush on a dentist recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. That includes free shipping worldwide. No wonder why Quip is backed by a network of over 10,000 dental professionals, was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year. Find out why for yourself. Quip starts at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/majority right now, you're going to get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/majority. getquip.com/majority. That's like one of those things where I would, and it never really even occurred to me, but that's like one of those things like I would give to like guests who come on the show. Like, hey, Dave Weigel.
A Quip.
Thanks for calling in.
They might take it the wrong way.
I don't know. This doesn't seem that delicate.
Hey, Dave Weigel. Thanks for coming up. Brush your teeth. But he's on the phone.
Like
he's
instead
phone
of like
I don't know. I don't know. It just occurred to me. Like
you throw him a toothbrush.
It just occurred to me. Like that would be. That's actually something we should probably talk to get Quip because I feel strongly about it.
Yeah. Why don't you give him out on Halloween too?
That's you know I would do that. I'm not.
He'll be the most popular dad in the neighborhood.
Exactly. Don't go to Cedar's house. He's gonna give you a toothbrush. speaking of most popular dad in the universe. Eric Trump, he's the, is he the smart one? No.
Well, he had been because he was staying out of the limelight.
Right.
Don Jr. has like, I mean, look.
Oh yeah. Now Don Jr. can't come out because he's
think
such
that
trouble, right?
Eric, as far as we know, is like accidentally like committed any type of major felony.
That's right.
Apparently.
I'm the one who's not felonious, or at least as far as we know.
I'm the one who was so stupid that
didn't
I couldn't
even come
be
to
invited
me. Yeah.
To the felonious meetings exactly. Because I'm so stupid.
Exactly. I was dumber than Fredo.
You're going to go
so
to
they
the
didn't have me
one?
Come.
That's the problem with these analogies. There's no Michael in the family. There isn't even any Sonny, because Sonny had an integrity to
that's
him.
Right.
And they're all significantly dumber than Fredo. And Fredo was like a tragic, sad figure.
That's right.
Like, stop calling him Fredo. It's hackney. It's very David Frumlake.
That's
like,
right.
He's Fredo.
Dumber than Fredo.
And it's also wrong. They're all dumber than Fredo.
Isn't like, Ivanka supposed to be the smart one, or are we just talking
she's
about
she's supposed to be Michael,
she ain't
right?
Michael.
That
all right, let's
look
be real.
Like a copy of Trump, a la the movie Multiplicity.
Ivanka's Mo Green.
All right. Nevertheless, Eric Trump showed up on Fox and Friends to explain that his dad is not just not racist. He's the least racist of any of us.
Since last Thursday has been your dad, according to people in the meeting, said some things about race and that people are calling him a racist for the last 5 or 6 days. I know you don't agree with that, but is there anything you could bring to this conversation you think is important?
My father sees one color, green. That's all he cares about. He cares about the economy. Right? He does not see race. He's the least racist person I have ever met in my entire life. It's total nonsense.
There you go. Well, can you add to the fact that he's not racist? Yeah, he's totally not racist.
My dad used to say, we're going to do a deal on boxing with the Jungle Bunnies. There'll be lots of green. He said that all the time. He said, we're going to have a bunch of darkies and other lowered colored come to Atlantic City. And I have friends who are leaders inside the savages community. If that doesn't say not racist, I don't know what does. We're going to have a boxing championship, and he was around Al Sharpton and Don King, and Dad said, we can do business as long as they don't touch the silverware or the woman. And right. If that is not racist, I don't know what is.
Only sees green.
Only sees green. Only sees green.
Yes, that's the economy.
Dad told me you can make money even with people that come from shithole inbred countries. Don't touch the women because you'll get AIDS.
How long do you think that they spent working on that? Like in the crisis Weeks. Management room, like, we've got a couple of different things. One is he's completely not racist, or how about he's the least racist of anybody you know?
Right, which I was going to say that might be totally true because at least because he has moments where he's like, I did shake hands with Jesse Jackson in the 80s, and that by those metrics compared to all of the Republicans and donors and Klans people and the comp shop and certain Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I am the least racist.
Eric comes in and he's like, my dad, how about this? My dad doesn't see any color, and they go, no, because the way you get around something like this is like you admit what sounds like a fault, right? But it's actually a defense. So the fault is your father's obsessed with only money, but we'll temper that by calling it the economy. So it doesn't sound like he's actually just trying to exploit stuff. It'll sound like it's about public service. And then you say he only obsessed with green.
I remember when Dad had black people moved out in front of Trump Tower the first time when I was 9 years old, and he said to me, it's so sad that there's inbred savages with lower IQs who come from a shithole place. I wish it was different. And that's the kind of compassion Dad has. He's totally not racist.
Yeah, when he took out an ad about the Central Park Five,
right.
That was totally...
Full page ad.
Totally anti-racist activism right there.
He was worried about the New York Times making money. folks, you spend about a third of your life in your sheets. You should make it count. It's time to switch out that bed in a bag set from years ago. Start getting better sleep with better sheets. With Brooklinen.com, you get the high-quality sheets and bedding you deserve without the luxury retail prices or the overwhelming big box store shopping experience, which I call just patent anxiety. Brooklinen was founded in April of 2014 by a husband-wife team, Vicky and Rich Fullop, on the philosophy that people deserve simple, beautiful home essentials without the luxury prices. Brooklinen cuts out the unnecessary markups, the retail licensing fees, the manufacturing waste in order to offer high-end designs, exceptional savings across the collection. It's the fastest growing bedding brand in the world. They have over 12,000 five-star reviews. One of them is mine. They got the winner of the best online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. And here it is. This is the key, because this is where I get all my recommendations. Number one best comforted by the New York Times Wirecutter blog. You know the Wirecutter? You never go there?
No.
That's actually got the best reviews. The Wirecutter. Well, that's cool. They have two different types. They have versatile colors and patterns that you can mix and match to complement any decor. This is luxury bedding underpriced. You have to have these sheets today. I'm very, very big on going to the Wirecutter to get recommendations, and I found them to be exceptional in their assessments. But I also can give you mine. I love my Brooklinen sheets. Try these sheets. I know you will love them too. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code MAJORITY. at brooklinen.com. In fact, Brooklinen is so confident you're going to love your new sheets. They offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. There's no reason not to give these sheets a try. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping, use promo code MAJORITY at brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code MAJORITY, Brooklinen. I'm telling you, these are the best sheets ever. All right, going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dave Weigel, who has been in Wisconsin this past week. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program national political correspondent for the Washington Post. I believe are you in Wisconsin right now, Dave Weigel?
I'm not. I'm in D.C., but I was watching that race like I watch all these, all things Wisconsin, especially for some reason I end up hearing about them.
What is this so important about Wisconsin, just broadly speaking, when it comes to it being a bit of a bellwether for national politics?
Well, it sort of was the petri dish for everything Republicans have done, not just in policy, but on voting reform. This is a state that had extremely progressive voting laws. Once they got power, Republicans, one, passed a pretty strict gerrymander, two, you know, pass voter ID law that there are studies on how much of the voted left home in 2016. Hard to see how much of that was the voting law, how much was people deciding that Hillary couldn't lose and they just you know, didn't like her. But it is a state that has written a lot of Republican policy. And the district that flipped last night was the 10th district in kind of northwest Wisconsin, the conservative suburb of Minneapolis. It was the kind of place that Republicans started winning in the 90s and never really lost. It's not just Trump country. It had been deeply Republican country.
I mean, it's interesting because I guess, too, the Americans for Prosperity, who spent heavily in this race, and I should say we are talking about
$50,000, yeah.
We're talking about Wisconsin's 10th Senate district, and I want you to tell us about that a little bit more specifically in a moment. But the AFP is a big Koch brothers funded organization, and so much did come out of. I mean, I guess in that respect, that's why Wisconsin. I mean, when this version of the show started very early on, I think within 4 or 5 months, I was out there for those protests when Scott Walker showed up and started shutting down all sorts of different things, including right to work stuff. So I guess in many respects, Wisconsin has given birth to some of what, from my perspective, is some of the worst phenomena in our American politics.
That's especially true in this district because this the old state senator, Sheila Harsdorff, won this 2000 kind of a squeaker. 2000 in Wisconsin was closer than a lot of people remember. You had the first kind of blush of rural voters breaking away from the Democratic Party. And she voted for all the rest of the whole Walker agenda. Democrats tried to recall her, didn't even get close. They did recall two senators and beat them in special elections after the Walker anti-union bills. Couldn't crack this one at all. What happened in this district was that the rural, I hate to use working class because it's so loaded, but you know, the places where they have not been doing great economically for the last 10 years, generally stayed Republican last night, but not with very high turnout. What flipped were these wealthier suburbs that were close to Minneapolis. You know, let's say you in the Twin Cities, but you don't mind a 45-minute commute because you can save a lot on your taxes in Wisconsin. Those places had voted Republican for like decades. That is the classic. That's like Northern Virginia. I about to say like Northern Virginia, but like Northern Virginia was 20 years ago, but voted right. Republican. Like Westchester County, New York, et cetera. And that's the part that to total surprise of Republicans, they lost. And what so the pattern around the country has been, oh, well, if you're a Republican, try and talk yourself into things being okay. Well, yeah, we could lose Northern Virginia, but that's super liberal and diverse, and who cares? If they're losing suburbs that are a lot more, a lot less diverse, a lot more economically comfortable, I mean, this is a part of the country that's been doing really well. That's a problem for them. And that's also specifically to Wisconsin. You've got the big achievement of Scott Walker this year was passing a bill to give Foxconn free money, like $4 billion in free money to come build factories in the other side of the state. And that turned out to not be popular in the rest of the state. That didn't get you know, fleeced for tax money to help this Chinese company hire some people.
So and so wait, so did Foxconn benefit this area, or are they reacting to that?
Not especially. I mean, this has not been popular outside. So this famously was started as some brownfields that Trump saw from an airplane and thought would be a good place for a factory. It was months of negotiating to give Southeast Wisconsin, which is actually outside Milwaukee, really conservative, to give them some this crop of jobs. And the rest of the state is just paying, you know, their taxes didn't go up, but their program is being cut in order, and debt being accrued in order to help this Chinese company build a Taiwanese, I should say,
right,
be officially proper, build a factory there. And if it's seen as a boondoggle, it's pretty problematic for Walker. It's also one thing Republicans keep telling themselves nationally that I find is that there's no way this tax cut is as unpopular in November as it was when it passed, because people are going to learn all the good stuff it did. It's going to do some good stuff. If you blow $1 trillion of deficit to give people free money, you're going to get some good stuff. But if you can frame it as a giveaway, people don't, from one person to another, it turns out Democrats can frame that in a way that voters don't like.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, because theoretically, right? I mean, if you're talking about upper middle class or high income earners from the exurbs, those are theoretically, and they're not in, let's say, New York or California, where they're not going to be able to write off their property taxes or their, you know, their mega mortgages or their state taxes. Mm-hmm. Those theoretically are the people who should be. Those are the people who theoretically stayed with the Republicans because, I mean, they're going to get tax cuts, right? And those are the people who should be rewarding Republicans. And if they're not doing that, then who's going to?
Yeah, the nightmare scenario for Republicans, I think, is if suburbanites who got tax cuts behave like Kentucky, poor Kentucky voters who got Medicaid, right? So the theory that Republicans have had about governance is that Democrats do stuff so they can give benefits to voters, and those voters will keep voting for them because they love benefits. It's this very zero-sum idea about politics. And then Obamacare is implemented over the last several years, and lots of voters get it and benefit and say, hey, yeah, but I don't like Pelosi, and they vote against the Democrats. The risk here that I've heard a couple of Republicans start talking about is, you know, they go home and they do meet people who got benefits from this tax cut, but they hate 90 other things Trump is doing, right? They, okay, thank you for the tax cut, but I why are you turning all these national parks into oil derricks? And great, thank you for tax cuts, awesome, thanks, but like my premiums are up. So that is a kind of existential worry for Republicans. If the one thing they did that was supposed to be popular turns out to be kind of a sick. And look, before Obamacare, the example Democrats have is the stimulus, and where they literally gave free money to save companies and watch the areas that benefited vote against them.
So, okay. So, and how, all right, give us a breakdown of just how much money was spent here and in a sense of this Democratic candidate, because she wasn't particularly, I mean, her politics don't seem to be, particularly on the left end of the spectrum within the Democratic Party necessarily.
One spin I've seen on this already is like, oh, she didn't run as like a Bernie Democrat, which proves that they need to run the center. No, I mean, she ran as a general Democrat. There was a check and balance message, because Scott Walker is now seeking a third term and has had unchecked power for his entire term as governor and has moved further to the right. So she ran as a let's slow things down a bit and let's also kind of share the wealth. And that was popular. She was outspent. I mean, Republicans got the candidate and the message they wanted here. This isn't like a Roy Moore situation where they can say we got screwed in this election. They got a state assemblyman who had been elected. Actually, the favorite part of the story had literally defeated the Democrat's son in a previous election. So that's going to be fun for them. And he had about $200,000 in outside support. He had more money personally, around $200,000 in outside support from Americans Prosperity, from Republican super PACs, things like that. Just advertising him as a, you know, he's conservative reformer, that kind of thing. Whereas Democrats had, they invested. I mean, they had a Wisconsin super PAC spent about $40,000. Eric Holder's organization spent about $10,000. The Democrat Party itself invested some money, but they're outspent about 3-2 or 2-1 in this race. This is a thing that's been happening for like the races where they couldn't get arrested and couldn't find anyone to fund them at all. There's enough so that they can compete if there's a big investment against them. You know, this is like the story of North Carolina, where Democrats just didn't see it coming in 2010 when one Republican donor funded these multi-hundred-thousand-dollar campaigns against a bunch of candidates and they got blown out. Democrats are trying like a small, much smaller version of that model, and then also capitalizing on all this grassroots activism that's been building all year. Like, they already, in a way that they did not have for really the entire Obama era, they can, you know, go around the horn to women's march groups and local left-wing organizations and get people to knock on doors.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you about that, what you know about that. I mean, I want to get back to what this means in Wisconsin and maybe what it means nationally. But have you heard much about, and I was wondering about this in the context of Virginia as well. I mean, in New York City, within the 4 or 5 boroughs, I guess it's really 3 boroughs that I've been to, different meetings that were primarily ad hoc women's organizations that had already begun, and this was 6, 7, 8 months ago now, had already begun fundraising for races like this one. I don't know if it was specifically this one, but certainly ones in Virginia, I'm convinced of it. Sending money and resources there completely under the radar. Have you heard any of that stuff? Like, I haven't seen any reporting on the implications of that. And I know these people were determined to do stuff, and they were, and I imagine they are. But I haven't heard anything about it.
You're kind of putting your finger on a debate inside of the Republican Party, which is whether there are too many organizations peacocking and not actually doing a lot. So this is not quite the question you asked, but One thing I've heard Republicans say, and this is more about House and Senate races, is there are several pro-Trump super PACs that send out emails to donors saying we're gonna plunge in this race, we're gonna help Trump's agenda, and they'll run like those TV ads you saw over the holidays, just thanking President Trump for being amazing, which is not usually the best use of money. No, it's Democrats. So American Prosperity exists, and it has had a bad couple of elections since November. It was very invested in Virginia. It's been invested in some state races. It's enough where like Republicans don't get caught unawares in anything. But it used to be enough to win upsets, and it looks like it isn't right now. That's partly because of Democrats having money, and that's partly just because of this activism advantage. Like, there was a 6-year period where Americans' prosperity representatives basically had the field to themselves, and right. they just don't anymore.
Right, because that there is money. I mean, but I guess I'm specifically asking about, have you heard about sort of ad hoc groups on the Democratic side who are going in and isolating and targeting specific races and supporting the candidates there completely under the radar because they're not, you know, they're not professional groups. They're literally groups of like 60 to 80 women who are meeting, who just know each other and live in one neighborhood and raising, I don't know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 or getting services in kind for a race in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
Or, I mean, is there a lot of that happening?
Yeah, I've heard these little examples from around the country. There's a, for example, there's a race, and I started to pay attention to this because in the 16th District of Pennsylvania, which is like Lancaster County and York and Reading, and not quite Trump country, but it's always been pretty safely Republican. They actually moved away from Trump last time. I noticed that the Paul Ryan Super PAC put that on its watch list where they're going to spend money, and I looked into why. It's because there's actually a crowded Democratic primary where there are local indivisible chapters and Women's March chapters that have actually gotten, you know, looked up how to get tax status where they can buy some, do some campaigning, some real campaigning ads, things like that. And you were kind of saying before, these can be very small. This can be 60, 70 people who just agree to go out every weekend. I've seen that all over the place. And they don't get a lot of attention. I mean, as a reporter working in D.C., I'm not sure if I'd pitch like a story, check out this new group of 50 people in Reading, Pennsylvania.
Right.
But that is kind of, as somebody who's been covering conservatives for years too, it reminds me of the kind of classic conservative clubs that would form in places, the 60s across the South and 70s, and where concerned citizens, quote unquote, would get together and just get votes out for a Republican who nobody gave a shot. And just realizing that elections are about, I hate to say everything comes down to turnout, but you know what I mean? Realizing
right.
that if you're motivated and the other side isn't, you just can get a couple a gang of you guys and move out there. I mean, I saw a lot of this in Alabama where the Doug Jones campaign kind of radar, I read about it once, had a lot of events for women where they just kind of put up a Facebook ad and they'd plug in, or a Facebook listing, not even ad, like a free thing. And they'd plug into the one of the many suburban indivisible groups and boom, they'd have a crowd ready to do meet and greet and then maybe a get out the vote operation just with very little notice.
Yeah, that's going to be part of my book, Don't Undersell Preaching to the Choir. But all right, sorry. So, what are the chances? So we have this one seat in Wisconsin. I off the top of my head, I think that makes the 11-14 in the Senate. Is that what it is in Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm.
There's a legitimate.
Yeah, it's 18-14.
18-14. Yeah. So there's a legitimate.
It was 19-13. Yeah.
So there's a legitimate chance in 2018 that Senate can flip. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
There is, because if this can flip, I mean, the way that we always look at these districts of all kinds is look at the vote, look at percentage for president, and boy, this one went for Hillary, so maybe Democrats can win that, and this one went for Trump, so it's going to be tough. This was a district that went for every Republican candidate for president for years, and it flipped. The flip in the vote was about 27 points. You know, it was almost a 20-point Trump district. Now it's a 9-point Democratic district. And if that is it, look, as mentioned before about the suburbs moving, if those suburbs moved, the thing that so on election night in 2016, early on, Wisconsin Republicans thought they're going to lose the state in part because vote returns from the counties around Milwaukee, including Waukesha County, were kind of mediocre. I mean, like these are counties where they usually blow it up and win by 40 points, and they're winning by closer and 30. If that continues, there's districts they drew to be suburban Republican territory forever. And if that's, if, because what ended up happening was that Hillary did better in those places and she did worse in rural Western Wisconsin.
Right.
If the Republicans do much, the worse in the suburbs, the flip side of that map that the president loves so much, where the country is really red, there's little islands of blue. The flip side is most people live in the little blue things. And if you Democrats do slightly better in a lot of these suburbs, the those are often in these seats drawn, you know, maybe drawn to elect, drawn for elect a Republican because the district went for Romney by 8 points. Those now look like they can flip. Not everywhere, but even there were other elections last night that I wrote up for the Post, and places where Democrats lost by 30 points before they lost by 9, or those kind of margins spread across a lot of these states. It is possible for them to actually pick up the Wisconsin State Senate, hard but possible, and it's possible for them to make gains in North Carolina is a big one where they
right.
The Republicans drew these maps, assuming that nothing would really change in 8 years, that people wouldn't move around too much. They didn't assume the voters themselves would change. So yeah, there's somebody looking at all these maps. It's kind of interesting to keep it straight and see where the next opportunities for Democrats are.
So all right. So lastly, so when you look at this and you look at this now over the course of a year, right? And there's been these type of special elections. Is there a trend? Like, I mean, for instance, if let's say that Ossoff race was in a month from now, just based upon no other, you know, sort of just assuming everything else stayed exactly the same. It's just that it happens to be later and all this time has gone by. Is there a sense that Ossoff would have had a better chance now than then? In other words, is the gap widening? Is there been any type of... Because it doesn't feel like there's been any type of, you know, like sitting here in my little, little tiny world, it feels like, okay, people, they're tired. There's a little bit of the enthusiasm, maybe not be as intense as it was this time last year. But when you start to see these numbers and people just coming out to vote, it doesn't seem like that's the case at all. It almost seems like it's going the opposite way.
Well, that's what I was saying before, where Republicans thought if we pass a tax cut and things are okay, people are going to come around and say, oh, that was working for us. And it might be disconnected from that. I will always point out about midterms where parties got wiped out, economy was much better in 2014 than it was in 2012, and Democrats got smoked everywhere. Economy was pretty good, and actually better in 1994 than it was in 92. Democrats lost everything. The economy was pretty good in 2006. I mean, this is before the bubble exploded, so unemployment is around 4.5%. So the economy can be pretty good in the metrics, but I think Republicans have this, some of it's learned, some of it's ideological, this inability to look at how people are feeling apart from whether their tax burden is high or low. And they don't really have, so they have this opening argument, which is that, well, we're not incompetent, we're able to pass fail. And this tax bill gave you back some money, even though Democrats said it wouldn't. They got that. But on the rest of it, let's imagine your health care bill goes up, which is it's going, or the premiums are going up, which it's going to for most people. Let's imagine the cost of living goes up, which is something Trump used to care about. But apart from all that, let's imagine you're doing okay, but you're really just annoyed with the state of the country. Because a thing that I think because of the Trump victory being a surprise that Republicans do not appreciate is how unpopular the rest of the agenda is. If you're once you're fairly comfortable, you can vote against a party for lots of reasons.
Right.
And if you are one of these, I mean, I really think there are probably millions of people who might have voted for, you know, some named generic Democrat in 2016, but thought took a chance on Trump. I mean, they've been off the train for months. And a normal president, I think, would say, well, that's a problem. let me adjust my policy. Let me maybe, like, not hack in some of these conservative nominees for judicial positions, or let me not rescind this trans. All the various social issues that Republicans are losing sight of, he's not doing that. So there might be a pretty positive situation if you look at one economic category, and then everything might be pissing people off in the suburbs.
Right.
Everything else.
It certainly feels like the case. And I just want to remind you, Dave, that Donald Trump only sees one color, green. That's according to his...
That's the best possible spin. I'm too greedy to be bigoted.
That's what we were just saying. That's what we were just saying. That's the perfect crisis management. You got to admit something that's not necessarily flattering about yourself, but it's better than being racist. So, Dave Weigel, thanks so much. Really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Oh, my God, we're going to get in almost right in time today. Move into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, this program relies on your membership for 94.78% of its revenue. 94.78. I only see green. I only see one color. You can become a member today by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget, yesterday was the Tuesday version of TMBS. You can check it out on our YouTube channel or on iTunes. Also, don't forget, Jamie now has her own Patreon, patreon.com/JamiePeck. What's your latest piece that you've written, Jamie?
Can you hear me? Okay. Last week, I published a piece about the Me Too movement and the limits of neoliberal feminism in attacking workers' rights problems. This week, I'm ready to drop another one about the backlash to the Me Too movement that I've been seeing from people across the political spectrum who think that it's ruining sex and eros,
made up idea
of sexiness.
There's no eros anymore.
So check it out.
I've had to pay off multiple women and have them sign NDAs.
What happens if I can't pay a woman $500,000 to pee on me without having to worry about another $150 for a cover up? Where does eros go?
It's a P2 moment.
It's a P2 moment. I say me pee. It's well, true.
You know, actually, my theory, maybe this should be another blog post. My money is on adult baby for that particular situation.
Oh,
think
adult
about
baby.
It.
What?
Yesterday, I said he's the boss gross. Baby. Now I'm going to take that to its logical
so
conclusion.
So what do you think he puts on, like, diapers?
I do.
Oh, that's very possible.
Who was, wasn't there a...
Their clothes.
Didn't Vitter actually do that?
Yes.
Jesus.
That's right.
Yeah, he did. She dresses him up in diapers, tells him he's a good boy.
Hey, no shame.
Oh. No shame. I'm reminded when I hear stories like David Vitter dressing in a diaper that I'm not okay with all types of sexual kinks.
I feel like
some are disgusting.
There's not enough money.
Particularly when done by certain people.
I feel like it would be almost a criminal act unless he was okay with a onesie. Like it's just a diaper. I feel like that's almost criminal.
Dan Savage has distorted our discourse so much that we can't say that David Vitter in a diaper is disgusting.
I'm thinking about Trump. It's not an acceptable sexual kink. I'm thinking about Trump.
I don't want to yuck the yum standards around here of adult babies everywhere. I specifically only mean to be shaming Trump right now. I want to make that clear.
I want to make clear that I'm primarily shaming Trump and also find you pretty fucking weird.
Listen, I'm okay with anybody wearing diapers. I just think that in Trump's case, it's got to be a onesie. Because you don't.
No, they're not mutually exclusive.
No, in Trump's case, I want a onesie. It's necessary. It's necessary. I agree.
It's not mutually exclusive. It's not the same thing. Not the same thing.
Got through more carpets.
Got to have not the same thing if it's just a onesie. Not the same thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move into the fun half of the program.
Can we get that Dave Chappelle R. Kelly remix?
I lost my sound sheet again.
All I can hear when I hear that R. Kelly song.
Can you print me out another sound sheet? Because I've already lost mine. Forget it. I just found it. There you go. All right, folks. Quick break. Head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. We will take your IM. Check out the app, majorityapp.com. Okay.